George, how did Genghis Khan count the dead after a battle?
Well, you see, the Mongolian armies were very efficient. And to count dead could be a very laborious process if you just ask one man to count. Let's say there were 100,000 dead, could take him a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you were in a hurry and asked everybody to count, they may count the same bodies several times. So that wouldn't work either. And for the Mongolian armies, it was important to move fast and also to have precise information about the enemy. Mm-hmm. So if they knew how many of the enemy were lost in a particular battle, they would know how many there left. So it was all had to be very precise intelligence. So they worked out a method where they could do it quickly and accurately. They asked everyone in their army to cut one ear from any of the dead bodies.
Oh,
then they would just throw the ears in a bag. This way there's no duplication, because if you found already a body with one ear, you wouldn't cut the other one.
Mm.
Now then, as soon as they got all the ears in the bags, on they would hop on their horses and off they go. Then at leisure, while they're riding, each can count their ears by taking it out of the bag and throwing it out.
Okay.
When they have done all that, on the next stop, they get together and they just add all the totals and they have the figure.
And they've got the figure.
My God. That's interesting.
Well,
George, what is flux?
The way I found out about the ears was that I, for the last year, I've been doing historical boxes for my friends. They sort of like birth year boxes.
Okay.
So I would ask each of my friends what year they were born in, and then I would make like a souvenir box that would contain all kinds of objects and peculiar information or whatever from that particular year. And I asked George Brecht what was, nobody knows, incidentally, his birth year. So I asked him, what is it, 1923, 1925? He said, oh, 1250.
Right.
Now, therefore, I had to dig up all kinds of information, like what tools were used, or how food was eaten, how it was cooked, what kind of music existed then, and all kinds of other historical and technical facts of that particular year or century.
I see.
And I was going to include an ear.
A human ear?
Yeah, except no hospital will give it to me. They just throw them away. So I need a human ear.
Okay. What other kind of boxes are you have you been doing lately?
Well, I could describe some earlier ones. Like in 1964, Ben Wattier, who is one of the hardcore flux man, we don't like to call flux artist, just a flux man.
Hardcore.
A flux worker.
Okay.
He used to bottle dirty water in little perfume bottles and sell it like for the same price as perfumes. Had a very dirty water. But we haven't sold any so far.
You haven't sold any so far?
So we have many gallons of it saved up for some eventual lucky day when we can dispose of it.
Okay.
Then George Brecht has done a lot of boxes, and I would sort of... he acknowledges like his boxes as an influence partly by Joseph Cornell boxes.
Cornell.
Yeah, so there's like the tradition of the surrealist boxes, and then which was transmitted to George Brecht and Bob Watts by way of Joseph Cornell. Now, George Brecht has done a whole series of puzzles, games and puzzles, and some of the puzzles were like a little ball in a box with a card reading, "Observe the ball rolling uphill."
I
could wait all your life waiting for this to happen. Or there are some, like, what you would call exercises, or mind exercises, where there would be one card, and on one third side, George Brecht would say that whatever Ben Wattier on the other side says is wrong.
Okay.
And meanwhile, on the other card, Ben Wattier would say whatever George Brecht says is right. Now, what happens if George Brecht is right about Ben Wattier, then Ben Wattier must be wrong in his statement, which makes George Brecht wrong, which makes again Ben Wattier right. So it changes all the time, it oscillates.
And an oscillation process.
Yeah, and it's like never still. Or like in the 60s, we must have produced 100 different boxes, which most of them had this element of humor. And I think that's what distinguished our boxes from surrealist earlier boxes, or any boxes done by others now.
Uh-huh. How big are these boxes, George?
Well, they vary from like just 2 inches or so, and the biggest one would be like a suitcase. So, and all kinds of sizes in between. For instance, there is in 1970, Jeff Hendrix did a little reliquary, which was to complement a flux mass that we did. And the reliquary has all, like it has a tiny little pebble, and it says that that's the last rock that killed St. James the Less, who was killed by stoning, you see. But that pebble is just like tiny, quarter inch across. Looks like it just had enough. Then we had even a penny dispensing machine.
Yeah.
With millions of those little pebbles. Now, each one was the last one that killed him. You would put a coin and you would get the last
Where did you
pebble.
Get that idea from there, George?
Well, actually, there is a real early predecessor of flux object, and that was in Alexandrian school. Alexandria, they had like a scientific community who just sat around thinking up of sometimes useful, sometimes completely useless objects, like toys, theater pieces. And they've done a lot of very valuable research in anatomy and mechanical engineering. That was like between 300 and 200 BC. So I discovered they had a coin-operated dispensing machine dispensing holy water, which was just squirted on you. You put a penny and pow, you get it.
Okay.
So in a sense, that we took off. Then I discovered that during medieval times, monasteries were manufacturing relics. Right, and they were just making thousands of true nails and so on. Because there was a recent study somebody made a recent study of all the true nails of the cross.
Okay.
And found that there was like a couple tons. I mean, could build a locomotive with it. Just literally every village in Europe has a true nail.
Oh my God.
So, and with it, in that reliquary, there are all sorts of other objects that sort of make fun out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Then,